thanks for downloading the audio podcast of this week's sermon. We pray you'll be blessed and encouraged with the words you hear.
Decisions determine destiny. And we left it this morning in a very... If you were here this morning, it was a bit of a downer. We had three funerals. We had widows galore. And it was really sad because the harvest had failed. And because the harvest had failed, they decided this one family who had two children, Malon and Kilion, that was weakly and sickly, they decided to go off to Moab, and they thought they could sit out the famine and the lack of harvest because there was loads of things in Moab, but they didn't know. They ran away because they were afraid of death for their children, and their children actually died. But before they died, they married two Moabite women, and these were pagan women, and that they were people who were not the people they should have married. But somehow, probably through the witnessing of Naomi, Ruth is starting to come out. And we're going to read in just a moment the end of chapter 1. But just to carry on the story, most of you know it, but forgive me. We left it this morning where there was death. And then the famine ends in Bethlehem. Remember Bethlehem? It's the house of bread. The famine ends there. And Naomi, in her agony and pain, she changes her name to Mara. She says, don't call me pleasant, don't call me delightful, call me Mara, because life has been bitter to me. And so she's a bitter woman, and she's starting the slow trudge back with her two Moabite daughter-in-laws. And as she's traveling along back, she thinks, this is crazy. The very thing that happened to my boys will happen to you, because if you come to where I live, no Israelite will marry you. You'll never get married again. You'll never have children. You're going to be in a desperate situation and you'll probably die. So for goodness sake, go back to Moab. She tries to get rid of them. And so we see for the final time in the book, Orpah, don't know much about her. She decides to go back to Moab. So she hugs her mother-in-law, kisses her, and heads off back into the sunset. Never hear of her again. I hope she had a good life. No one knows. But there's those wonderful, amazing verses that are almost like fantastic poetry where Ruth says, where you go, I'm going to go. Where you live, I will live. And where you die, I will die. And she clung to her mother-in-law. And somehow she knew her destiny was to head back to Bethlehem with Naomi. I don't know how. I don't know why. I would imagine some of the night talks, some around the campfire. We would have heard about Naomi's God, and he is a God of love. And so she decides to come back. And so they start on the way back to Bethlehem. But in tune with the harvest theme, we're about to see this morning the harvest failed. We're about to see the fruit of the harvest tonight. Because the fruit of the harvest was about to bring about not just the salvation of one family, but long term will fulfill the whole family of God and the salvation of the world. Now, I know you're getting late now because your body clock is an hour later. I've seen 7 yawns already. So just pinch yourself, hold yourself in. We'll get there towards the end. And if you nod off, I will assume you're praying for me. Okay, so I will not be offended. I'm saying they're great prayers in Ballymoney. It's very warm in here now, and I've taken my jacket off because I'm starting to perspire. And so if you nod off, I'll just assume you're praying. Okay, so thank you for praying for me. 10 of you already. That is fantastic. I'd be worried, but 2 of them are Graham and Rhonda. But there you go. So we're going to bring it in at the last verse of chapter 1. And it says this. So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem. And you get the first, da-da-da-da. Arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. Now Naomi had a relative. And by the way, this is not Mills and Boone. It's a great love story, but we get the answer to the problem in this verse. So we don't have to wait to the end of the book to find out it's got a happy ending. The writer actually tells us now it's going to be okay because we're about to see the appearance of a tall, dark and handsome man. Doesn't say he's tall, dark and handsome, but I just imagine he is. I don't know why. Probably a bit like me. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. And then Boaz arose from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters, "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they answered. And in verse 5, it may be a bit of preacher's license, but Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, "Who does that young woman belong to?" I think he's already getting his eyes full of something here. "Who does that young girl belong to?" And the overseer replied, "She's the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. And she said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." And so Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field and don't go away from here. Stay here with the woman who worked for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the woman. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. And she asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a stranger?" Wonderful, wonderful passage. It gets more and more exciting. Sadly, I've only got up to chapter 2 in my preparations. So this is all stuff that I'm doing and living through right now. I was saying to Graham, the thing I miss is a series. I preach in churches every week, probably 48 churches a year. And they all want a one-off Rhema word. They all want something sort of going to be the moment. And about 4 months ago, I thought, I'm sick of just doing one-offs. I want to try to prepare a series. I miss doing a series. And so I began to write this for me and thinking, I don't know whether I'll ever preach it, but I just wanted to go back to looking at a book and unpacking it and seeing some of the truths. And so tonight is a mixture of where I've been going in the last couple of months in my life, because you see, decisions. I'm going to keep saying it. Decisions determine destiny. You're here tonight. You've made a decision. You've left it's getting a bit late now. Your body clock says it's now. What time is it with that clock? It's really quarter to nine. Some of you have had your cocoa by now, and you've had your two McVitie's wafers, and you're about ready to go to bed. But you're here in church. You've made a good decision, I hope. I hope. One or two more praying for me right now, I can see. So thank God for that. But here we are. Decisions determine destiny. And these people arrive, and they're heading back. And suddenly, we begin to see the disaster and the tragedy and the awesomeness. Suddenly, when you start to head back to Bethlehem, when you head back to the house of bread, things begin to change. It's an amazing principle, and I'll come back to that at the end. And the Bible, it's full of people who have trouble. One thing that I used to get really cross at the critics who would say to me, "You know, that Bible, it's all about people who are scared of life and they're all hiding behind this Jesus character and they have this sort of fairy tale lives." But if you only read the Bible, you'd know people have real trouble. Do you have real trouble in Ballymoney? Is everything always fantastic? Does anybody in Ballymoney have bad marriages? Anybody in Ballymoney married to someone who's got a massive drinking problem? Anybody in Ballymoney has a son or a daughter who's on drugs? Anybody in Ballymoney has life problems hit them square in the face? You think, where am I going to turn next? It happens to all of us. It happens to me. I've been there. And we have to learn, when trouble comes, do you respond or do you react? When I played football, you won't believe I played football. I'm built for rugby now, but I was a footballer. And I can remember I opened in prayer in a church game once, and I got sent off within 2 minutes. I said, Lord, help us today to have a good game of football. And then I took this bloke off thigh high in a tackle because he kicked me the last time we played. And I thought, I'm going to get you one back, fella. God forgets, but I don't. And I was sent off within a couple of minutes. You see, I reacted. But when you respond hopefully in a different way. Sometimes when we react, I do not have on my car any fishes, any texts. I occasionally put a Baptist sign on the back just so people don't know I'm a Pentecostal. Because I have been known, particularly when drivers take me on the inside, particularly when people tailgate and start to flash you. I'm sure nothing doesn't happen in Ballymoney. I've been known to get, and my wife says, you're a Christian, calm down. But I just react. And I should not be reacting at my, I've been a Christian 50 years, but sometimes I still react. Am I the only one? Oh. I think, Graham, you take over. I can't go any further. But we see here some things that are just so great about God because, you know, this morning I said it was pretty bad news, but tonight's all good news. Tonight we start to see the story turn. These lonely, bedraggled couple are heading back, starving. They're coming back. And once you start back, God begins to move. And I first of all see here, wonderfully, it's God's provision. First thing, God's provision. You see, God is so creative. Here we see the right place, the right time, and the right man. Just amazing. It says they're returning back. They've heard that things are getting better. How did they hear? It takes a long time. There wasn't an internet to say, quick, come back. The harvest is over. The famine is over. They heard by word of mouth, maybe weeks. They could have headed back at the wrong time. Imagine if they'd arrived back and the barley harvest had finished. They'd probably be dead because there was no food and no relatives to care for them. But they went back to the right place. They went back to Bethlehem. They went back to the house of bread, and they went at exactly the right time, as we'll see. And you know, God's timing is one of the most amazing things that you'll ever know. The number of times that God just comes at just the right time to sort things out for you. At just the right moment. Our church building, I remember, forgive me telling a personal story, but in our church, we grew to about 250, and the only thing we could do was knock, it wasn't that wall, it was that wall, and there was a car park there, and it was owned by a plant hire company, this bit of land, and you will understand this being in Ireland. He was a Catholic guy, and he really didn't like us churches next door. And so we were desperate, and we couldn't get planning permission because we couldn't have a car park. But people were fainting in the church in the summer, and it wasn't the Holy Spirit. It was so hot, so close, body ministry. You could spray everywhere, zip everywhere, but people still smelt. And we had a hostel across the way with 78 homeless women in, and they would come in, and my word, they would stink. And my word, there was issues and problems, and people were uncomfortable. We had one lady called Susan who was, bless her, lovely girl, but she was incontinent, and she would sit in four different seats in the night and leave us all a little blessy as she moved around the church. It was not comfortable. And so we wanted this land. We've got to get God to move, and I'm desperate. And so being as we're type A, well, I hope we're a type A man, or type A woman, Taipei elder, our job is to make, if there's problems, we solve it, Mark. So I hire architects. I get people scanning over cities for a new building because we can't get this land. And in the church, we've got these very unusual people called prophets. And they like hear from God. And they're coming to me and say, Pastor, God's spoken to us. We're going to get the land. And my next question was, great news, did God tell you when? Oh no, he didn't tell us that. Just got to trust the Lord. People are dying while we're trusting the Lord. It's so hot. And so I'm doing all of this stuff. And then One Sunday morning, I don't know what Graham's and Rhonda's routine is, but in Glasgow, there'd be 250 people there, a lot of problems. And so I wasn't visible until after the service. I would go into the office and pray, seek God. We'd got assistant pastors, we'd got other people who could see people, but I didn't want to see people. And people knew to disrupt me before the meeting, it's got to be really important. It's got to be like Edwin Michaels at the door. There's got to be something really important. And so 10 to 11, I'm giving it major loudy, seeking God. It's 10 to 11, and they know not to disrupt me. And the deacon came in and said, "There's someone to see you, Pastor Kevin." And I'm thinking, somebody important. He opened the door, and there was a tramp. A smelly tramp. And I gave the deacon the "you are sacked after the meeting" look, because I'm about to go on the platform and preach the word of God, and I'm about to hear a story. And I can almost know, probably doesn't happen in Ballymoney, but in big cities, you get the people coming to tell you that a grandma's died in Manchester or a granddad in Liverpool, and they've got to go down to Liverpool or Manchester, and would you please loan me £30? And if you give me £30, when the next time my social money comes up, I'll come back. And you know very well, you'll never see them again, and it's just money gone where. And I'm almost going for the wallet, because it's for now 5 to 11, and I've got to get out onto the platform. And I'm really cross. And so with my best pastor's voice, I'm, "Come in, sit down, what can I do for you?" I was full of grace and mercy. And he started saying to me, "You know, we've got this building. People are leaving the church because we can't expand. They say once you're 80% full, we're probably 92% full. And I'm pulling my hair out. And then now there's a tramp here." And so I sit down and my attitude is stinking. And I said to him, "What do you want?" He said, "A friend of mine, dad has died." And I'm thinking, "Oh, what do you want me to do?" I said, "I'd like you to pray." "What else?" "Nothing. Just pray." And I started to feel a bit guilty. And he got hold of my hand and he said, "Would you pray for him? I want to tell him that you prayed." And so I prayed. And I'm feeling really bad. I'm starting to feel a bit emotional because I've been a really bad pastor. And so I prayed for this man, and when he finished, he opened his hand and he thrust into my hand 2 one-penny pieces. And he says, "I don't have much, but I think the church will need these." What he didn't know, in the week a lady came to see me with a strategy to build the building for the land we can't get. And she said God had spoken to her and said the strategy is called Pennies from Heaven. And I went onto the platform, and whoever Mark was in Glasgow, it was Alec, and Mark's giving it loudly. I said, I just stopped the meeting, and I told the story, and I started to weep. And I said, "I don't know how it's going to happen, but this is a God moment. Because God's timing is always perfect." So we took an offering for the extension that we couldn't build because we can't get the land. But we took a step of faith, believing God. We took £7,000 instantly for the church. 2 weeks later, the man who I went to ask to give me the land, who told me to bleep, 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 bleep off, and if you were the last bleep, bleep person in the world, I'd bleep, bleep, give you the land, said to me, "I'm taking early retirement. Would you like the land?" We got a £750,000 extension. We took the second offering for the building of £93,000. And the building was built and paid for in 3 years. Because it was a God moment. And I nearly missed it. Because sometimes God moves in a way we don't always expect. And my attitude was stinking, and I nearly missed it. Guys, I want to tell you, God will provide for you the right man, the right woman, at the right moment, at the right time. He is that kind of God. We have just got to make sure we're heading towards the house of bread, because he can open up things that you think are impossible. We built that building. The church is now probably 450 strong in the church I used to have. God has moved in power. We've gone from seeing the very, very worst people of society come to the church. We've now got doctors and lawyers and are in the church, and God has just moved the church on. That the church in those days, we had an offering of about £150. They take £5,000 a week now. God's moved on in the most amazing way. And I had just a little bit of teeny part in it. And I nearly missed it. Because I missed the moment. I was looking towards other things. God provides things for you at the right time, the right place, and the right man. Boaz. And the final thing in that particular, it's always the right truth. You know, we live in a day, I don't know whether you have, do you have food banks over here? In the UK, food banks are everywhere. Can I just say, food banks were not the idea of the Trussell Fund. If you know your Old Testament, God provided in his teaching thousands of years ago provision for people who were poor and foreigners and strangers. And what they used to do, I'm sure you know, when they took the harvest together, they weren't allowed to, the four corners of the field had to be left. They had to leave the corners there. And that was for the poor people and the widows and the foreigners to go and help themselves so they wouldn't starve. And they also had the rule that if you dropped anything to the ground, you were not allowed to pick it up. And that would mean that the poor people could go and glean and pick it up. And so we find here this desperate family, they're starving. God's starting the process as they come back. He's already beginning to prepare destiny for this girl, Ruth, which she's going to find in the most amazing way. And I'm just staggered as I look at my life. I've told you one story. Wasn't in the notes to tell you that, but I felt led to tell you. How God can just get you in the right time, the right place, with the right person, and suddenly, boom, destiny starts. But if you're heading towards Moab, it's not going to happen. You've got to make sure that you're in the house of bread. You're looking for a husband. You won't find the husband in the clubs and the pubs. You'll find them in the house of bread. If you're looking for a wife, if you're looking for destiny in your life, you won't find it in Moab. You'll find it in the house of bread. Oh, it's just amazing. So we see, first of all, God's provision. Secondly, we see God's providence. And I just love this. You know, there wasn't a big sign. She goes out and says, let me go and glean. There's loads of fields. There wasn't wire that said Boaz's field, Graham's field, Mark's little field, Johnny's field. There was nothing like that. The Kerr field, that's a very big one because Wesley's very wealthy. And he got this big field. Sometimes you don't know it, but he's a secret millionaire. But don't tell him I've told you. Don't tell him I've told you, but just see him afterwards. He's got a few bob on you. He nearly bought a book this morning. So that's how good he was. He picked it up, looked at him, put it down again. I don't know, Wesley. Once you pick it up, you're going to buy it, fella. You know, we're there and she's just walking, and I just love this verse. It says, in fact, I'll just read it, because this verse is really, this sermon is all around this one verse. It says in verse 3, as it turned out, she just happened, by chance. The fields were no one knew who they were all together. There was no demarcation. They were just fields. Only the people who worked there knew who fields it was. But as it turned out, and I just began to think, how many times in my life has it just turned out? I can remember 40 years ago, a young lady going to a party, and she told me that she wanted a man called Brian Allsop. I called him Brian Allsmuck, but he got ginger hair, really good looking. She wanted Brian to walk her home. That was the plan at the party at our friend's house, for Brian to walk her home. But as it turned out, Brian never got a look in. Because once these lovely lips of mine As it turned out, I ended up walking this girl home, and she's from the other side of the brook, if you were here this morning. She's a grammar grub, grammar school girl. She can do joined up writing, and I kissed her on the door as I said goodnight, and next year we've been married 40 years, as it turned out. As it turned out. I can remember over my life the number of times when I put myself into a position where it just suddenly turns around. I've just come back from New Zealand, and as it turned out, one of the NLT members couldn't make it. But as it turned out, my diary was free, and I got sent to New Zealand with free flights. And they really blessed me, as it turned out. You know, this boy who couldn't put words together and had a severe speech impediment. For those who weren't here, I couldn't use a phone till I was 17 years of age because I was so shy. But as it turned out, I traveled the country earning a living with the very thing everybody laughed at me. As it turned out, Mark, you're singing great up there. I don't know. You're not good looking, but you're a great singer. Sorry, Mrs. Mark in the corner. I'm sure you've got your bits. I'm sure this bot bit, yeah, he's up there. As it turned out, you've become a leader of the church. And I know there'll be one or two people thought, well, why did he become a leader and not me? But as it turned out, God wanted you to become an elder. As it turned out, Graham and Rhonda, they were telling me, sometime talk to them about their first church. They were really, I mean, I was so blessed, but Rhonda was telling me about her first church and having to have two rooms in a church to live in and no shower. Graham got into a habit he's maintained all of his life. No, he hasn't. They went through, but as it turned out, I told you this morning, I didn't want them to come. Graham phoned me and said, I think I'm going to go to Northern Ireland. I said, no, don't go there. You don't want to go to Northern Ireland. That's not for you. They're a bit strange, those Irish. I mean, you're Scottish. They'll take hold of you, but a bit like the Scottish didn't take too kind. They don't like, don't go, stay here. I'll give you more money, stay.
Didn't say that.
I didn't, no. I'm preaching now. My name's Billy, not Silly. But as it turned out, this lovely couple in the last 5 years have come to your church. Some of you here are senior leaders, have been senior leaders. As it turned out, Wesley. As it turned out, Pastor Moller, as it turned out, that verse has just, it's been resonating. I was saying to Rhonda, I was allowed to speak at a global conference for missionaries. And I got into the car afterwards and I began to weep. I just cried because I began to think of the goodness of God and his favor on my little life from across the brook. A council house boy, left school at 15, got no qualifications, never went to Bible college. My route into ministry has been completely different. And I've ended up a member of the NLT. I've ended up doing these. As it turned out, folks, as it turned out, you end up in Himalayas, Nepal. As it turned out, God moves so many times in your way, and it just turns out. And we think it's some kind of coincidence. God doesn't do coincidence. I want to tell you, for those of you who head back to Bethlehem, there's an as-it-turned-out moment just waiting for you. It may be a relationship. It may be a job. It may be a ministry when you think, well, I'm just too old. You know, you get into your 80s and sometimes people think that you're finished. God's got things for you to do, folks. If you've got breath, God's got a job for you. As it turns out, God isn't ageist. You're not too young. You're not too old. You're not too fat. He isn't a fattest either, thank God. You know, there are some churches in the world that will not allow people who've got a bit of weight to go on the platform because they want everything to be attractional. And you've got to be thin or have liposuction or you won't be on the platform. And I'm just saying, you know, whatever shape you are, whatever your age, as it turned out, she got into the right place. God has amazing plans for your life. God's providence. I could go on forever about that. But the final thing I want to talk about is God's protection. I want you to remember what this little girl must have gone through. She's heading back to a land where she's never been, where she knows she'll be hated. Have you ever gone anywhere where you know you'll be hated? She's a Moabite. The Jewish people are commanded to have nothing to do with Moabites. They're not allowed to ever go into the meeting place. They're never allowed to meet. They're going to be ostracized because of their evil practices. And she's walking with her mother-in-law. She's starving. Now, I don't know. I'm not trying to go too far with this, but let's just say she's a young woman coming to a strange land. And there'd be pretty some rough men out there. Some people could sexually assault her. Some people could physically assault her. There's a good chance that she could have got killed. But she's still walking. She's still walking. And she finds herself. She must, as she sets out to glean, because she would have slightly different skin. Wasn't an awful lot, but certainly her tongue would have been different. And she's with these crowd of Israelites, and they begin to look at her. You're different, you are. Where are you from? And she's feeling all tense and all nervous and I'm sure terrified. What's going to happen? She was vulnerable. She was a widow. She was childless. It couldn't go any worse. And then she's in the field, a complete stranger, and then Boaz arrives. And her ears must have picked up when she said, when she heard him say, "The Lord bless you," to the workers. And she must have been thinking, maybe I'm going to be safe because that's the way Naomi talks. And then when the people say back to, "And the Lord bless you too," and suddenly she starts to feel a little bit more at peace. And then unbeknown to us, and I'm convinced, I can't prove this, but I think when he looked at her, there was a bit of a core moment. Let's be honest. Sometimes you look at the Bible in a sterile way, but this man was a middle-aged man and he saw this young girl and he thought, wow, whose woman is this? Who is she, this pretty dark-skinned girl? And there was an instant attraction. Now, was that just flesh? Nobody else is saying that. I think God began to put a desire in his heart for this lady, and this was going to be the beginning of the incredible destiny that would eventually lead to the birth of Jesus. But sometimes you've got to feel safe. Sometimes this world is unsafe. And I want to tell you, my daddy in heaven looks after his children. And you know, if the worst thing that can happen to us is that we die, if you know Jesus, that's just the start of eternal life. And you're going to get a new body. I've asked for Mel Gibson round about Braveheart time. Not now, but Mel about 1984. I'm not going to have artificial knees in heaven. I'm not going to have a stent in my arm. I'm not going to be a pirate with a sunken chest. I just think I'm going to look really good. You see, for the world, death is this terrible, terrible thing. But for us, it's the start of the next exciting stage. I've been in there. Have you been in their house? Big, big house. But it's nothing compared to the mansion that waits us when we go to heaven. We're going to get new bodies. We're going to be living in the presence of God. No more tears. No more sadness. No more pain. It's the most amazing deal, folks. The most amazing deal. God has promised to look after us all the days of our life. And I don't know about you. Margaret likes Strictly Come Dancing. I'm more of an X Factor. That's where we come from across the brook. I'm more Simon Cowell with the big trousers. Margaret's more the flowy. But you know, the one thing about dancing, Do you watch Strictly? Anybody here Strictly? I think Balamoney would be Strictly. I think you're more Strictly. You just look more Strictly Come Dancing. You know, the whole premise of that program is that a professional dancer takes an Ann Widdicombe, a John Sargent, somebody who's useless, and by the expert hand of the professional, eventually the amateur starts to get better. And come the end of the program, somebody is awarded Strictly Come Dancing champion. And when I've watched the final, I sometimes think they give the professional just a little bit of a prize, but the big prize is the amateur. You know what? 50 years ago, a 14-year-old boy, as an invitation from God the Father, I took hold of his hand, and he has begun to take me along the dance floor of life. And you know, he's learnt me the tango, the rumba. He's done all sorts of lessons with me. And you know, what he's done for nearly 50 years is he's made me look good. Because that's what the Holy Spirit does. And if you're a great singer, he's made you a good singer. If you can preach, God's given you gifts. And if ever we lose sight that we're only ever the amateur in the hands of the professional, and there's going to come one day that will happen when the dance of life will come to an end, and God's going to dance me into his presence. And I'll be rejoicing in the presence of God. It's just the most amazing thing. Folks, never believe your own publicity. For those of you who preach and you think, no one's ever preached that sermon with five Z's. Folks, it's him. It's because of him. I'm going to finish with this. Two timeless truths as I finish the weekend. First one, I make no apologies. This family, we need to know again and again that God's love, truth one, God's love is unconditional. He loved me when I stuttered. He loves me as I get older. His love is totally, before I was born, he chose Kevin Malcolm Pete to give his heart to Jesus. There was a day I got saved, ladies, gentlemen. And God's looked after me all this while. And I've made some mistakes. I've walked through some difficulties. There's been problems. Things have happened that haven't worked out how I wanted to. But there's been one rock. Psalm 13, when David's going through all the problems, he says, but I trust in your unfailing love. Graham and Rhonda have been going through the valleys, but they can trust in his unfailing love. His love will not fail them, whatever happens in their lives. It's timeless truth. There ain't a thing you can do. You can be a naughty boy and a naughty girl. You can go off into the pubs and clubs of Ballymoney. I tell you, God will still love you. He'll still want you to come back if you make a step back. This family made dreadful mistakes. They went to Moab. But the first thing when they started to come back, God said, come on, let's start the destiny ball rolling. And this Moabite woman, just watch Naomi. You'll think you're bitter now, but I'm going to get a great husband who's got lots of money. You'll never be hungry. All that you lost is going to be restored. You went away full, but you came back empty. But just watch how I'm going to work it. And there's going to be a wedding. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. And Naomi, you can change your name back to Naomi. Pleasant and wonderful. Don't be bitter anymore. Because God's moving things around. Oh. If only I could get out of my heart, there are no words that I can say can express what I'm feeling about God's provision, God's protection, God's destiny. Timeless truth one, God's love is unconditional. You know, they left Bethlehem, they went to Moab, they broke all the rules. But the second they started to come back, which is the timeless truth too, destiny begins when you go back. I started with this, I'll end with it. There's no point being in Moab saying, give me my destiny. You've got to make a journey back to Bethlehem. You've got to come to the point where you will say, I'm sorry, I've made a mess, but I'm coming back. And God can do the most amazing things. And I don't know why, but I felt just to minister one verse in closing. I don't know why I did this, But I just felt today, I went into the bedroom this afternoon ostensibly to have a bit of a lay down. And the second I closed my eyes, this verse came to me. And I just feel I want to just take a couple of minutes to pray one verse over the church. Is that okay to finish? And I want to do something physical. I'll say the word and then I'm going to say it several times. Isaiah 41 verse 13 says, "For I am the Lord your God. I am the Lord your God who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, do not be afraid."
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. If you would like any more information, have a look at our website at www.ballymoneyelam.com.